It is a wonderful blessing to be here today. I'm so excited about this men's event. When I think about not only the fact we're spending time together talking about spiritual things, I am also so excited about the common bond that is occurring between the congregations in the Tri-Cities area. Tri-Cities holds a special place in my heart. I spent most of the 80s at East Bristol, and so I'm familiar with this area. The 80s, that was the days of big hair, and now we have no hair or thin hair, but it was a long time ago, but it was a wonderful time, and I greatly love this region. Today we're going to talk about a lot of important things. I might call them the big rocks. The management professor began his class, and he came in and he had a large jar and some rocks. And he just started putting rocks in the jar. And he got to the point where it was full, and he asked the class, he said, "Can I put any more rocks in it?" And some of the more engineering types suggested that he rearrange the rocks, and he got maybe one more big rock in there. But they finally declared that it was full. And he reached under the table, and he pulled out a bag of pebbles. He started pouring pebbles in there, filled it up, and said, "Is it full?" They said, "Sure." Then he got a bag of sand. And he poured it in, and by this time they're kind of catching on, so they didn't say anything. And then finally he poured water in it. He says, "Now what's the lesson?" And they said, "It's amazing how much you can get done if you really use your time efficiently." And he said, "No, that is not the message. The message is, if you don't get the big rocks in first, you won't get them done." Today, all day, we're going to be talking about the big rocks. When we start talking about beginning with the end in mind, we're going to talk about planning for the really important things that are part of all of our lives. What might be some of those things? Well, you might think about personal big things, things that I need to work on. I might need to work on my personal Bible knowledge. I might need to be working on my prayer life. I might need to be working on the big rock of my personal evangelism. I might need to be working on moral living, and not just what I do, but what I think. You know that, right? The Lord doesn't just care what you do and don't do. He cares what you're thinking, what's going on between your ears. We might need to be working on those things. So there might be a set of spiritual big rocks that I need to work on, that you need to work on, that are out there that we need to be thinking about. Or I might have the big rocks of family agape love, and I use agape because feelings come and go, but actions and service should always be there. Do I serve my spouse? Am I raising my children the way they should be raised? Am I thinking about where is this family going on the intermediate term, in the long term? What's the plan? That's a big rock. Am I serving my extended family at times of life when we have elder parents, or we have to care for special needs individuals? Big rocks. What about the work element, right? Do I have gainful employment? Is it ethical employment? Am I doing a good job? Am I at the stage of life where I'm building education so that I might get to gainful employment? Is there some continuing education that I need to be engaged in? The big rock of those things. So the whole sphere of work, we're going to talk about some of that today. What about practicing stewardship with the blessings that I have? Do I give well? Am I benevolent in my actions and my spirit? Do I control the affairs of my life in a proper way? Do I keep debt down? Do I prepare for contingencies so I'm not a burden on another person? These are big rocks of our lives as leaders of ourselves and our families that we need to be thinking about. And then finally, I might think of a big rock personally as being engaged in community and things of public service. But what about big rocks for the church? What are some of those things that are out there that are goals that we need to be working on? If we're not involved in the Great Commission, we're not the Lord's church. Do we have a regular planned activity around missions, around local evangelism? What are we doing in those things? What's the plan? What's the approach? Every congregation is in a different place what are the plans and actions we're taking around the Great Commission? Feeding the flock, obviously for elders to be thinking about, preachers, even Bible class teachers. Do we have a plan? Do we have a broad perspective that says we're going to cover topics over time that hit this sphere? And how are we doing in that? And analyzing our congregation, where do they need the help? What's the plan? What's the approach? Not hitting things haphazardly moment by moment. One of my very core things I worry about is training the young. You know, Matthew 16, when Jesus first introduces the church, he says, the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. And we talk about that. We talk properly so about the fact that we're in a battle and that Satan is constantly fighting against us. But do you know one of the main tools of Hades? Aging and death. Aging and death. How many times have you seen congregations that were thriving and sound until some leaders got old and died? And then what came after wasn't there. That is one of the greatest, harshest tools in the church, aging and dying. And there's only one solution for that: training the next generation, training the next generation, training the next generation. In fact, think about this. The measure of your work is only shown after you're gone. That's really going to be the measure of your work, because the sustainability model of the church to fight against the gates of Hades is about training a big rock. Is what are we doing to train the next generation for knowledge, for leadership, for soundness, for thriving in the Lord's work? A big rock. Benevolence. What's our church doing around benevolence? You realize that benevolence is the door to some people's hearts. And that's the way that we're going to get to them. And being involved in that and engaging in it, we should have a plan by that. So, there are big rocks out there, and you may have some others that I haven't mentioned that are really good things. We're going to talk about some of these things in detail today that should be things that we ought to be focused on and getting done. So, how do we get there? Well, some people, they just sort of have the Nike thing. Well, just do it. And I have some sympathy with that approach. Or they might follow that great comic sage, Larry the Cable Guy, get her done. That's an approach to just go do it. By the way, I'm not an advocate of Larry the Cable Guy, so don't say that. But the phrase, get her done, is a good phrase. Just do it. But the problem is, big things, hard things, take more than just a just do it mentality. They take planning. They take beginning with the end in mind. We want to talk about some of those things. Some people say, well, we're just going to do this by faith. I'm all for that. But you know, faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God. And when I read the Word of God, I see an awful lot of planning going on. Planning is a very biblical concept. You remember when Moses was beginning to lead the people, and he was having a problem with everybody coming to him with his issues, and his father-in-law, Jethro, comes and says, well, why don't you have this plan where you divide the people up and have a leader over some, and then leader over that, and then just the most important things will come to you, so you can get this handled, and then you can go on about the task of leading the people without this big burden being on you. You know what that's called? That's called a plan. I got a big problem. I got to have a solution for it. And I build a plan and then I execute on it. Or you might think about Nehemiah. Have you ever read Nehemiah's approach to building the walls of the city back? And that he did this part and he did that part. And he adapted the plan when there were obstacles, right? He was prepared with contingencies when obstacles came into play. And so he had a plan to get the work done. You can think about Jesus' ministry. 3 years of training the 12 men to go do it. An intense, long-term plan so that he could launch the kingdom as it came at hand. Planning. I think about the Apostle Paul as he went to take the gospel to the whole world. And he went, I note, to cities that were at the crossroads of the Roman traffic, because the only way he was going to get it out there was to get to a center place, and then it would go out. And before the New Testament is over, he declares the gospel has gone to the whole world. Why? Because he did some planning, and he put those things in place. So, yes, we do this by faith. Yes, we do this by prayer. But we have a tool that we can use, and that tool is called planning. So a couple things we want to hit. Elements of a good plan, and then how to lead a plan. Whenever we are faced with something that we want to do, some big thing, whether it's personally or whether it's in the church, we ought to ask ourselves the question, what are we good at? What are we bad at? What's going to help us get this done? What's potentially going to get in the way? Sometimes that's called a SWOT analysis. Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. Those of you that have been around consultants or others in the workplace may be familiar with that. But you look out there and you say, okay, what is this congregation good at? What are our core strengths? Where are we weak? What could hurt us in being able to execute on this plan? What's happening in our environment, whether it's in our community? What are the things that could hurt us in getting it done? So having some thought, if we're going to hit a big rock, if we're going to go do that, on what our strengths are and what our weaknesses are. Set the vision and keep the vision. You have to constantly, when you're doing something, especially over across a long period of time, is constantly set the vision. How many times did Jesus say, the kingdom of God is at hand? The kingdom of God is at hand. This is the vision. This is what's happening. And as we're working on either something collectively as a congregation or our family, or we're working on a particular task, where are we headed? What is our identity in this work? Personally, it's always important to reinforce our identity. You remember, some of you may remember as a kid, you leave home and your mom would say, remember who you are, all right? And, you know, if you were in the smart aleck stage, you would report back your name. That usually wouldn't go well. But you know what she meant, right? This family has a identity. You're part of this family. Behave that way, right? So remember who you are. Some of the church crises that are occurring across the country, congregations get on an identity crisis. It's like, well, we're not sure who we are. I love this. They send out monkey surveys and say, who should we as a church be? That's not the way you run the church. The Lord defined the identity of the church. We just need to reinforce that identity as elders and leaders, preachers. So set the vision and stay clear on who we are. Distribute the work. Now, one of the big problems we have, especially in the church, is the 20-80 rule, right? 20% of the people do 80% of the work. Well, sometimes that's because people won't work. Sometimes that's because we don't know how to delegate. The best way to get the most done is to delegate it and get other people engaged in it, and that it should be an active part of a plan. That could be true in a family. It could be true, certainly in business, but it's definitely true in the church. One of the things about delegation is what happens when you delegate something is you don't get to dictate how it's going to be done. And that's hard for people, right? Because, you know, I, of course, know the best way to do this. So let me tell you precisely how to do this, line item, line item, line. That's the fastest way to get somebody to do nothing, right? Because they need to own it. And so, what's the vision? What's the big picture? Can you help with this? You go figure out how you think is the best way to do it. That's the way you get big rocks done. That's the way you get the most work out of the most people. Jethro was talking to Moses about delegation. And I doubt every decision that those men made was the exact decision that Moses would make. But either you can own it all, which means you're going to get a lot less done, or you can let some of those things happen out there that might be done differently than you would do it. Distribute the work. Define the critical path. What's got to happen? There's a series of steps between here and there. Any of you that have been involved in building projects, construction, you understand that, other kinds of engineering things. There's a critical path between here and there that's the most important part. If you read again in Nehemiah, it talks about he did this part of the wall, and then he did this part of the wall, and he did this part of the wall. And if you go and you study that historically, the way it was laid out, it was the only way you could get it done. He had defined the critical path for building the wall. Well, the same thing is going to be true for us. If we've got a program, a project, what are the key things that have to happen? And those are the things you have to keep your eye on, because this one depends on that one, and this one depends on that one. Define the plan. Lay it out. Diversification. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 2. Give a serving to seven and also to eight, for you do not know what evil will be on the earth. Another way to say that, don't put all your eggs in one basket. It's a great lesson for investment and all kinds of things. But when it comes to getting missions done, when it comes to getting things done in the church, recognize not everything is going to go well. So spread out some things so that you have some successes and you accomplish some good. Don't put everything into one thing, a key part of planning. And we could talk about some other things about count the costs, be ready to change or adapt like Nehemiah did if the plan does not go well. So we make a good plan to do these rocks. Begin with the end in mind, use some of these elements, and then start our march forward. But the other thing we have to think about is leading the plan. And as men in our families, as managers in the workforce, as leaders in the church, I think this is where we have our biggest problem. In Luke chapter 22, we read, now there was also a dispute among them, this is verse 24, as to which of them should be considered the greatest. And he said to them, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those who exercise authority over them are called benefactors. But not so among you. On the contrary, he who is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he who governs as he who serves. Jesus is saying that the best leadership model is not the one the world knows. It's not the command and control of the military. It's not the organizational chart of the large corporation. It is a servant leadership model. And we will be more effective in all spheres in leading plans if we carry out and use a servant leadership model. Peter had something similar to say to elders in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 3. Not as being lords over. That word lord over has the idea of dominion, domination. That's not what we should be in our families. It doesn't work in the workplace, not at least in the best workplaces. And it certainly is not to work in the church. Some people think that leadership is telling people what to do. It's absolutely wrong. Leadership has nothing with telling people what to do. Leadership is about capturing their hearts and minds so they want to go do what needs to be done. And there is a huge difference between the two things. There are six elements of emotional leadership that I want you to think about for a minute. And again, if you're in the workforce and you manage people, or as an elder, or just leading a work in the church, these are very important. The first one is affiliative. In the church, we might call this fellowship or caring for people. The best thing that I can do on Monday morning when I get to work and start interacting with my team is have a personal conversation. How was your weekend? What's going on? I heard your child was sick. Nothing to do with the workforce. In fact, sometimes it's estimated that 40% of a manager's time should be spent just in creating that personal relationship with the people that work for them. And I would submit the same thing is true for an eldership, that it shouldn't always be about every time you come up to somebody, I need you to do that, right? Or be disengaged until it's time to go do something. Of being affiliative. Now, as Christians, we recognize that as a natural core thing of loving our neighbor and loving one another in fellowship, and we should do that. When it comes to getting work done, it is a critical element, because until people know you care about them, they're not excited about getting the work done that you're going to talk to them about. And so, being affiliative. Second one is vision. We talked about Jesus and the example of setting the vision. Letting people know where we're headed. You know, we're not in the army where you're on a needs-to-know basis. You know, a need-to-know basis is a horrible management technique, okay? Vision is, this is where we're going. We're going to take that hill. We're going to accomplish this mission by training native preachers to teach in their home country. This family is going to increase its spiritual knowledge by having regular Bibles. There's a vision and why those things that are out there, so that the people that you're working with know where we're going. And one of the biggest things we can do is just constantly point at where we're headed. Where is this congregation headed? What are we trying to do? Are we engaged in, we're a congregation about foreign missions, and we're going to do that. We're a congregation about serving the benevolent needs in our community, because we've got a big opportunity for that. We're a congregation that's going to be about planting congregations in another place, because there's an opportunity for it. Whatever it is, but being articulate about what's the vision and constantly reinforcing that and talking about it, because that's the way you capture hearts and minds, getting people to rally behind the vision. And pace setting. Some people think leadership is standing up on the upper floors, looking over the manufacturing floor and making sure everything's going all right. A better way is getting down on the floor with them. Same thing's true. Eldership, there's a mission meeting going on. The deacon is running in that. Going in there and sitting and just listening and encouraging, helping, right in the middle of the action. And along the way, maybe even picking up and doing some things. Not just sitting back and watching, but doing some things, participating in the work. That's pace setting. And that's the way you keep the work going, because you're seeing it, but you're engaged. Rather than, oh, they got that, and I told them what to do, so let me stay out of it. Pace setting is a big one. Then there's coaching, and there has to be. Sometimes things aren't going well. You sit back and you watch thing, and you can see a problem. You've got a little bit more experience. Coaches know that the most important thing is not what goes in the ears, but what happens between the ears. And so sitting there and having enough maturity to analyze the situation, recognize it from the other person's perspective, and then being able to plant a seed that helps them be redirected. That's coaching. Now, that takes skill. That's hard work. And I think that's important, that we really think about it from the other person's perspective and what do they need to hear. So coaching is the fourth one. Fifth one, be democratic. Now, we talk about the church as a monarchy, and it absolutely is. We have one king. But as a organization of servant leaders, sometimes the right thing to do is just let everybody else decide what to do. This or that. What's better? Often that's when there's two choices, none of which are great. So from time to time, we may have to just say, here's the situation, here's the options, what do you think? Because they're going to be the ones doing the work anyway. And think about how that endears them to you when you do that. And then finally, there is a time for autocratic. That means I'm going to tell you what to do. That may be 2% of the time. If the building is on fire, yell fire and everybody get out now. That's a good time to do that, right? But that is a rare thing for a leader to be involved in, only occasionally. So These are some things to think about. What's the key point about this? When you're leading something, home, work even, church, remember servant leadership. And just like Jesus, it's about trying to capture the hearts and minds of individuals. A couple of verses from Proverbs, and I'll be done. Proverbs 14:15, the prudent considers well his steps. If we're going to accomplish the big rocks that we're going to talk about today, you're going to think about the individual steps to get there. Proverbs 15:22, without counsel, plans go awry, but in the multitude of counselors they are established. Listen to people. They will help us get the work done. Proverbs 16:3, commit your works to the Lord, and your thoughts will be established. I mentioned the Nike slogan, just do it. You know that the word Nike is the Greek word for victory. If we just do it and do these big rocks, we'll be victorious as men of God. Thanks for listening.